You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY. DIY.
Oh. Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 148 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show, and today you're going to hear from Rob Filomeno, our Director of Music Publishing here at CD Baby. Rob's job is to manage our CD Baby Pro service, our publishing admin service. Basically, his job is to make sure that your songs are making the most money they possibly can through all the revenue streams opening up to independent artists through music publishing. So I know you're going to want to hear how things are coming along with opportunities to make money from your songs. But before we get to my interview with Rob, I am super excited to announce to you that we are doing our first ever CD Baby DIY Musician Conference. That's right, conference. In Chicago. So this fall, October 2015, October 23rd through 25th, in Chicago at the Congress Plaza Hotel, right across the street from Millennium Park. And the best part is the price is just $49. If you've been looking at going to a conference, you've probably noticed that a lot of them are like $250 to $500. We wanted to make this affordable because it's important for us to make sure that you can come and be there. It's going to be $49. We have some speakers we're going to be announcing soon, and a couple of them are worth the $49 alone. So I know it's going to be a great event to help you move your career forward. And that's kind of the point of what we're trying to do as well. A lot of conferences you go to and you hear someone from a major label bickering with someone from a major retailer about, you know, stuff that just doesn't really apply to an independent artist, at least actionable items that they can take and go feel like they're moving their career forward. We're really making this about the artist and what you'll learn, and making sure you have tangible takeaways that you can go and put into practice and move your career forward. So that's going to be October 23rd through 25th in Chicago. You can find details in the podcast show notes. I'll put a link to our blog announcement. We're still rolling out information about it. We just wanted to make sure that everyone was saving the date and had that on their calendar to be there. The $49 ticket price is an early bird special, so you want to get on that as soon as possible. Tickets are available at Brown Paper Tickets. I'll also put a link to that. And we'll have a full conference website up soon. We're still working on that and pulling all the details together. So I'm hoping you'll be there, and then we can hang out. It'll be a fun time to just meet the folks here at CD Baby, and I want to meet as many of you as possible as well. So again, the first ever CD Baby DIY Musician Conference this fall, October 23rd through 25th. I hope you'll be there. Now that we got all the exciting news out of the way, let's jump into my interview with Rob Filomeno. All right, well, joining me on the podcast here is Rob Filomeno. Rob is the Director of Publishing at CD Baby. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Kevin. Thanks.
And you are the very first CD Baby employee outside of the crew that helps me do the podcast. It's been on the podcast, so it's you should feel honored.
Well, I'm honored to be in the circle of trust.
Thank you. You are. So we're going to talk about music publishing. We're going to talk about things related to CD Baby Pro. Artists have lots of questions about music publishing and a lot of the new rights and issues relating to protecting their music rights. Lots of headlines around that topic. So first off, let's jump into a little bit of your background as a musician.
Sure. I took a sort of a non-traditional route towards to get here. I came up as a guitar player. I started very late. I didn't start playing guitar until I was 18. Most people drop out of college to tour with their band. I dropped out of college to learn how to play guitar. Which was not exactly the way to go. It was an odd life choice at the time. Eventually worked out pretty well. My parents were super supportive, thank God. So anyway, I took to it really quickly, and I, after about 5 years or so of playing, I found my way into it professionally, playing studio sessions in the city. Eventually started meeting some people in the commercial music world and found out that you can actually make a living writing music for a living. So I begged and pleaded some people that I had met that owned a music house, which was a company devoted entirely to making music for commercials. And I got a job answering phones, And after a period of time, I started working on some composition myself, eventually won a few projects and started to get into the rotation as a regular composer and started writing music for a living, which was a lot of fun.
So when you say the city, for those of us outside of New York City, you're talking about New York City.
It's shorthand, yeah, Manhattan. Manhattan was sort of a central location for commercial music during the Golden Age. I came sort of just at the end of the Golden Age of commercial music, where it was before there was a DIY movement. I think like 2003 or 2004, the M-Box came out and really changed music production. Before that, you had to have a big studio in order to produce music well. So there were only a few companies really doing it. And in commercials, there was a lot of money being made by very few people, and they could afford to hire staffs of people just to sit there and write music all day.
So I'm kind of curious how you got your foot in the door. I mean, you said you begged and pleaded, but how did you, it seems like New York City, going to a city like that, trying to crack into the studio scene is nearly impossible.
Well, it's right. It takes a tremendous amount of luck. I mean, you got to be ready when your opportunity comes, but it was very lucky. And there are very few opportunities. I see it now as I see, having had my own business in that industry, people coming to me and looking for work and trying to crack their way into it. I only now recognize how difficult it really is and how lucky I was to ever even get a shot at it.
We could probably have you back on the podcast at another time, just to even talk about the whole idea of composing for commercials, and because I find that fascinating. It is a world that a lot of artists don't realize exists. I mean, we all hear music in commercials and figure it comes from somewhere. But the idea that that's someone's full-time job of just writing for that context. But wanted to focus in on a little bit about something you had told me, that you were in that position and making your living, but that no one had really pointed out to you how to protect your, you know, all your music rights and tap into all the revenue that you're owed as an artist, which I found kind of mind-boggling.
Yeah, one can say that we were maybe sort of exploited employees at the time, because we were...
That never happens in the music industry. Yeah.
We were, you know, well paid for the work, but we weren't given a lot of education about music rights. And there were music rights floating around that were really relevant to you as a composer. And it took me almost 4 or 5 years of writing music and doing quite a bit of it, including writing several hours of television music for NBC News Productions before I even really had a sense that there were music rights attached to those that you could monetize as a writer. So finally somebody gave me a little bit of schooling on what ASCAP was, which I'd heard of in just this sort of nebulous way. I didn't really know what it meant or anything. And I joined ASCAP, and I started registering all the things that I'd written for the past 4 years, going back to all the contracts that I'd signed without reading, you know, just to kind of get paid the upfront fees and seeing what rights I actually had. Registered them with ASCAP, and then saw after a period of time there were performance royalties flowing in, which was shocking and a life-changing revelation for me. So,
and you didn't really describe the kind of composing work you were doing. You said it was commercial, but you had some pretty big spots.
Well, we did a lot of national stuff. We did one Super Bowl spot back in 2008. That was sort of our biggest achievement. We won several awards in the advertising world. We had a big hit with a Cablevision commercial in the New York area, which they've actually written news articles about, which I'll send you a link. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I do need to get that link.
So we worked on some notable stuff for sure. And I did a lot of composition for NBC's Dateline and A&E Biography and Court TV and stuff like that. So a lot of things that people have heard of.
Yeah.
So
I think a lot of artists are probably thinking, well, how could he not know? Or on one hand, people thinking, how could he not know that there was more money? And the other hand, people going, there's more money? Yeah. I mean, because what were you getting paid? What do they call that you get paid for when you're just writing for that kind of
platform? Oh, well, we got paid upfront fees, and we worked on a split with the music house. So the music house would get a fee, and a portion of that would go to the composer. And it was always a pretty nice fee. So you didn't really ask questions. There were other revenue streams as well. Most brands and agencies, if they're showing television commercials, have agreements with the Screen Actors Guild and with the American Federation of Musicians. These are talent unions. So you would get paid through them as well for performing on the commercials. And there was a residual that came every 13 weeks if they kept airing it. These are all outside of music rights. These are just performance benefits that come from being on a union contract. So the music rights thing was always something apart that we really didn't, you know, as a musician, you tend to, there's certain things that just make your brain hurt and you don't want to think about and you just want to put them in a box. And then I started to really think about them. And I spent a lot of time learning and teaching myself and learning from others how it all worked, and then got into music licensing once I saw the opportunities there, and then eventually into publishing. So learning about music rights, I mean, it was a sea change for me and how I approached my work and my career.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good segue into talking a little bit about what you're doing here at CD Baby for us as the director of publishing, talking about CD Baby Pro. Lots of questions from artists as kind of in a similar position that you were in, maybe not necessarily working for a music house, but they see their iTunes sales and they see the money they get for playing live and they think, that's all I need, right? Yeah. Some people have gone as far as affiliating with ASCAP or BMI or, you know, CSAC or SOCAN or PRS, depending on what country they're in. And they think, I'm covered for everything, and not really realizing that now one of the cool things is that all these revenue streams are being opened up for independent artists. So so talk a little bit about that and the idea of, you know, first of all, what is music publishing? I think we should start there. What is music publishing?
Sure. I mean, music publishing is the act of promoting, monetizing, accounting for composition copyrights, which is essentially the side of music, which is the lyrics and melody, the other side being the sound recording. So when you write a song, you become the music publisher immediately. You're granted that right, and you're granted exclusive rights that go along with being that music publisher, the right to reproduce, the right to distribute, the right to public performance, both terrestrial and digital, the right to to create derivative works for that. So you're granted exclusive rights, and you have those as publishers. What many people will do is they'll find an outside publisher who wants to buy a portion of that copyright for them in exchange for some consideration, usually money, I hope money. You should always get something in exchange for your copyrights, in which case they'll then own at least a portion of it. So publishing, you know, copyrights are traditionally owned by a combination of publisher and songwriter directly.
And what kind of, when we're talking about songwriters and publishers, what kind of royalties do they get paid? You know, as an independent artist, I see, like I mentioned, I see the money that I may make from iTunes.
Right.
I see the money I get from live shows. I may even be getting performance royalties from ASCAP.
Right.
So I've got everything, don't I?
Well, sort of. I mean, there's things like performing live. There's a royalty stream associated with that. There's a performance royalty that you can get in addition to whatever you're getting paid to just show up and do the show. So if you're registered with ASCAP or BMI, you can file your set list with them, and they will pay you a royalty, assuming that the venue is licensed by ASCAP or BMI. You'll get paid a performance royalty for having performed there. It's a couple of bucks, but it adds up, and it's your money. That's the most important thing. Other types of royalties are, you mentioned performance royalties from things like broadcasting on television, radio, Starbucks. Anytime your music's publicly performed somewhere, it's generating a royalty because ASCAP and BMI and CSAC and all the major performing rights associations have licenses with entities that broadcast music. So you're also entitled to mechanical royalties when a reproduction of your music is made, either physical or digital. Digital, there's a couple different kinds. When you sell a permanent download, there's a mechanical royalty associated with that, that you, if you're the writer and the publisher, you're entitled to. In the U.S., you collect that directly when you sell something. But in other territories, like anywhere outside the U.S., that's held and collected by a mechanical society, and you're not getting that directly unless you're affiliated with that mechanical society. The other side of digital mechanicals is streaming. A lot of people don't know that interactive streaming generates a mechanical royalty. It creates an ephemeral copy of your music on a hard drive, and that entitles you to a mechanical royalty. And a lot of people are just not aware of this, and they don't know how to get it. These royalties are administered by the DSPs themselves. They have third-party companies like Harry Fox and Music Reports that collect these and pay them out to publishers. And most DIY writers have no idea this is even happening. So this money's out there for you, and it's your money. And the amounts are, you know, it depends what you're doing, but the amounts don't even matter. I mean, this is just a question of professionalizing your rights and making sure that you're in line to get everything that you're entitled to. It's your money.
Yeah, I like the term. I'm going to give you credit for coining the term professionalizing your music rights.
It was so important for me, and that's. Yeah. I think it really is something that people need to apply a lot of rigor to. So I think it should be named, and it should have a process associated with it.
So we're going to get back to what you were talking about with streaming and mechanicals, because there was a lot in there that I think is different than what a lot of artists just have assumed. Mm-hmm. But when talking about professionalizing your music rights, we're talking about making sure that what you are registered or what all is involved.
Yeah.
What
making sure that you're in line to get everything that's coming to you. And there's some of these things are easy to do, and some of them are a little bit more difficult to do. They should all be done. It includes making sure that the metadata from your recordings is consistent across all platforms that you're distributing to, whether that be your sound recordings or your publishing, making sure that you're registered with every entity that's relevant to you in collecting, whether that be with Sound Exchange for your sound recordings to get your digital performance royalties for non-interactive, or performance royalty here in the U.S. to get anything else that may be coming to you. And it includes getting registered all over the world, because right now music is being used in ways that it really never was before. For a typical U.S.-based DIY artist, you know, a great majority of their revenue is going to be here in the U.S., but at least, you know, historically. Nowadays, that's, you know, that's not necessarily the case. You can come from anywhere. So you want to be in a position to capitalize on wherever your music is being used.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing that we were talking about recently is that I forget what the exact percentage is. I should have been prepared with this percentage, but a lot of the money, revenue we're seeing for our artists from YouTube is actually, majority of it's happening outside.
Yeah, I was really surprised. 80% of the views from CD Baby artists who have opted into our YouTube program are ex-US, outside the US. And that equates to about 45% of the revenue, just because the monetization is a little bit lower. About 45% of the YouTube revenue for CD Baby artists is outside the US.
Yeah.
It's surprising. So you never know.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing that a misconception a lot of artists have, that even if they're not popular or doing it full time, that, well, there's not going to be money for me in other places. And it's just surprising. Like, that's that stat, I had no idea. And and just to hear that that much activity is happening outside the U.S. and the majority of our catalog, those artists have probably not been in those foreign territories. It's
the
power
there.
Of the internet.
Yeah, it's just the way things drift through osmosis across borders. I mean, there really are no more borders in the digital world. The other thing that's interesting, and that's changed since things have gone completely digital, is there's no more shelf life for a release. I mean, you used to put something out, you had a little burst of activity for a few months, and then it just went away forever, unless you got a sync license or something like that down the road. Nowadays, your music just sits there. It sits on a DSP forever. I mean, for a long time. So you never know. There could be, over the course of years, an accumulation of revenue that's just completely incremental to you. I mean, you never would have gotten otherwise. So you need to be in a position to get to capture all of that, because it's your money.
So I want you to explain the foreign mechanical royalty a little bit more, and then we want to talk about the Spotify royalty. You kind of mentioned them really quickly, but in foreign territories, why are they holding on to the mechanical royalties?
Well, it's just the agreements that the retail stores have with the performing with the mechanical collection societies there. So they have a deal that says when you sell a download in GEMA in Germany or whatever, when iTunes sells something in Germany, they're going to send mechanical royalty to GEMA, and that's going to be distributed to GEMA members or to those that go out and affiliate with GEMA. So it's just the way the rules work in the retail markets in those other countries. It's not the way it works here. Here we work on what's called a pass-through basis, where the sales get passed right through to the label, and the label is supposed to account for the mechanical royalties to the publishers, which is challenging because now publishers have to go and chase down labels for money. In foreign territories, they can just affiliate with a mechanical society and collect their money. But most writers, most small publishers even, aren't affiliated with foreign mechanical societies. So it's really hard, which is why they do administration deals with larger publishers that are affiliated in all these foreign territories, so they can go out and collect their money for them.
So I think that's an important key piece of information for artists to understand, that in the U.S. it's different. So for us, we don't understand how the potential is. And some of the folks that have been using CD Baby Pro have found, like, oh my gosh, there's these foreign mechanicals. I had some sales overseas and I didn't realize that I wasn't tapping into all my money.
They just sit there. They just sit there, and eventually they go away. Eventually they get distributed to the biggest artists in that country based on market share. So you got to go out and get them. It's your money.
So Spotify, I think where people get kind of tripped up is it really gets the line between a non-interactive and interactive streaming and radio and all this kind of stuff. It can get kind of confusing. But with Spotify, there's also a mechanical generated both in the U.S.
Correct.
And foreign.
Correct. There's two royalties with Spotify. There's a performance royalty, as you would get with any other radio service, right? So they're licensed by BMI and ASCAP. So there's a small portion of their revenue that goes towards paying performance royalties. And there's also a mechanical royalty, because when it was deemed that an interactive stream, which is when you drill down through a list of songs and you select what you want and you press play, that's a choice the user's making. It's making a copy. You're reproducing that song. You're entitled to a royalty. And it pays about 10.5% of the platform's revenue goes to publishing royalties. So that's just for the publishers, just on interactive services like Rhapsody, Google Play, Amazon Prime, and Spotify.
And this is different than what I get. My CD Baby account just isn't a
Those are sales. That's sound recording. Yes. That's a payment for a sound recording stream.
This is additional revenue that I need to be tapped into.
Correct.
So we're going to talk about CD Baby Pro and what it is that we do for artists. So with CD Baby Pro, we are a publishing admin service.
Correct.
How is CD Baby Pro different than ASCAP or BMI and what those folks are doing?
Sure.
What does CD Baby Pro give me?
Well, performing rights associations like ASCAP and BMI are licensing organizations. They collectivize the rights of a whole bunch of writers and publishers, and then they go out and license those to broadcasters, right? And the members benefit from the negotiating power that ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC have as a result of these enormous user bases that they have, right? So, but they're not publishers. They're not publishing administrators. What they do is license out your performing rights, and then they collect the money and distribute it to you. So that they're really focused on one of your rights as a publisher, as a writer, which is public performance in the case of ASCAP. A publisher or a publishing administrator is concerned with all your rights and how they monetize and how that money's collected. So when you're a publisher, in addition to the rights that we already spoke about, the right to reproduction, distribution, you also have the right to administer money associated with those copyrights. And you can take that right and assign it to someone else without giving up any of your copyright. So a publishing administrator takes care of things like making sure your music is out in the marketplace and collecting royalties, but they don't actually keep any ownership. So they're actually just doing it for a small commission, just making sure that your money is out, your songs are out there earning money.
So with CD Baby Pro, CD Baby will go out on my behalf and make sure that money is flowing to me. Why can't I do this myself?
Well, you can, theoretically. I don't know if you'd want to. There's one thing in the DIY world that I think is important to note at almost every stage of the game. Just because you can do it yourself doesn't mean you should do it yourself.
Yeah.
Registering your songs all over the world is a project that'll probably take you several years, several thousand dollars, and cause you to learn about a dozen languages. If that's your thing, great, go for it. What we're doing is offering at a low cost the opportunity to get your songs registered all over the world and start collecting money immediately. This is something that was really not available until very recently. Companies like SongTrust, who are our partners on the operations side, have made publishing administration available to the masses. They sort of did what CD Baby did for distribution. It used to be you had to have a record deal to get good distribution. Mm-hmm. Now you don't. Now you can do it yourself. Publishing administration is still fairly new. So you can do it yourself. Would you want to?
Absolutely not.
Oh, God, no. That's
horrible. If I'm not already affiliated with ASCAP or BMI, you'll affiliate me.
Yeah.
You'll collect my money. But there's also the talk a little bit about how the collections work, because I think this is where some of the confusion lies with folks is that again, they'll say, well, I'm already have my songs with ASCAP and they've registered me in, they collect my foreign royalties.
Right.
And so I think there's some confusion about how that's working and then what a publishing admin, not only are we tapping into some more royalties, but how we can benefit even just your performance royalties.
Right. Well, I think it's, foreign is important to note the distinction between what ASCAP does and what we do. What ASCAP and BMI do to collect your foreign royalties is they create reciprocal agreements with foreign societies. And that's an agreement that says, hey, German society, we have some writers who are having their music performed in your country. You guys have some writers that are having their music performed in our country. Let's share information and make sure that everybody gets paid. Right, and that's pretty useful, and that gets people paid for foreign performances. There are questions about how long that takes to happen, because local writers are going to be prioritized over foreign writers, and that's just a normal course of doing business for a performing rights organization that has millions and millions and millions of performances to deal with every month. And then there's a question of this, so there's the speed and then the accuracy, right? Because you're not actually registering your songs with these societies. You're just sharing information and anything can happen, right? What we do is we actually go around and work with locally affiliated publishers. Our administrator has a local publishing company in Germany that will register your songs in Germany as basically you as a local writer. So you're going to get your money. You're going to get paid and prioritized the way local writers get paid. So we're seeing writers get paid within 6 months, which is really the minimum amount of lead time in places like Brazil, where we're affiliated directly. So they're getting their money 6 months after performances, where me as a writer with ASCAP, I would get my foreign royalties, but it could be 18 months, 2 years, 3 years after the performance has happened. You'll get these lump sums on your statements, on your international statements that'll say like Germany, December 04 through January 05 or whatever, you know. So whereas if you're a locally affiliated, if your songs are registered locally, you're going to get granular reporting. It's going to be more timely and more accurate.
So in to sum up, I could get paid faster.
Get paid faster, yeah, more accurately.
Yeah, yeah.
And ASCAP and BMI, they're aware of this. I mean, they admit this. They say that their reciprocal agreements are a backstop and not a first line of defense for collecting royalties accurately and in a timely fashion.
Yeah. So when we're talking about signing up with CD Baby Pro, you're going to go out and hopefully get me money, get paid quicker. And, you know, I still talk to artists. We'll tell them these things and they'll say, but I'm not making any money. What would you say to the artist? I mean, you touched on a little bit earlier, but what would you say to the artist that's, you know, I find that artists want to take this, you know, their music career seriously, but there's this weird thing that they'll only take it seriously if they're making money.
Well, I think it's hard to know how much money you're really making until you're plugged into every possible stream, for starters. The second thing, this is not for everybody. I mean, some people are just hobbyists. You know, there are two sides to the equation. There's, am I doing this professionally? Am I trying to make money at this? Or am I just doing this because it's fun? Because music's a great thing for me to do with my spare time. So I think it's really what you want to get out of it, for sure. I mean, you can't say how much money you're going to make until you're actually plugged in and have access to every way that you can make money.
Well, I can't remember if it was you or someone else, because we were just on a panel together down at the ASCAP conference, that somebody had mentioned the idea that if you don't take care of business, you're sure to make no money. So,
well, that's a guarantee. I mean, if you don't do anything, I did it for years. I went for years without taking care of my business, and I made nothing. And starting to take care of my business, putting that rigor and that discipline behind it, and I said it earlier, it was a transformative experience for me as a professional. It gave me financial independence, allowed me to start my own company. Like, these are not small things that come easily every day. It changed my life. So,
if I'm an artist and I sign up now and I realize, okay, I haven't been taking care of business, I've got some things like the situation you were in. You had some performances that were out there, maybe some other royalty streams that were out there for you. And I sign up with CD Baby Pro. How far back can I kind of reclaim some of those things that have happened?
Well, the official line is 3 years, although we've seen them go back much farther than that. It depends on what's hanging around. It depends on how accurately the records, you know, have kind of held together over that time. But 3 years is sort of the general rule. I know with Sound Exchange for sound recordings, we've seen the Sound Exchange go back as far as 10 years for new signups. So it really varies, although the rule that what everybody talks about is usually 3 years.
Okay. So do I need anything? Do I need to contact CD Baby and say, here's my download history in foreign territories? Do those kind of things help, or you
got? Well, we have all that. That's one of the benefits of signing up with a company like CD Baby to do your publishing admin, is that we're also your distributor. We have your distribution data, and we can go and match up with the performing rights societies and say, hey, you only paid us for this amount of performances, but we actually sold this amount of units. Where's the difference?
Yeah.
We can reconcile much more easier than traditional publishers, who really are on the outside looking in when it comes to data.
Well, excellent. Any final words you have for us, Rob?
No, I would just say that there's really no reason not to take care of it. The cost of signing up with an administrator, the cost of really doing business is so low now. It's really never been this low or accessible to the average DIY musician. I mean, there's just no reason to do it. I think it's a choice you have to make, really. Are you going to be a professional or not? I was working as a professional, and I still wasn't professional. So there are steps you have to take. There's a rigor and discipline you need to put into your work if you're going to take it seriously. And I truly believe it pays off.
Yeah, I agree. I think even, you know, I've got a full-time job here at CD Baby. And, you know, even the music I make, I still take very seriously. And if there's money out there, even if it's a couple bucks, I like getting,
it's
my money. If it's $1,000 or a dollar, I'll take it because it's mine.
Exactly.
And it's just exciting to see your music working for you.
Yeah.
And you can't put it to work for you if you don't take care of business.
Yeah.
So, all right, Rob, well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thanks,
Kevin. You did good. You did good.
I appreciate it. You'll have me back.
We'll have you back. I really want to dive into that the idea of creating and composing for film and TV. We've talked about it, I think, with someone years ago, but it'd be fun to revisit.
Awesome.
And,
yeah, I look forward to it.
So great. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you have a question that you'd like to ask Rob about music publishing or CD Baby Pro, or just a question in general, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. If you call the listener line, try to keep your questions about under 2 minutes. I think it cuts off after about 2 minutes. So we'll try and get your questions on the podcast and answer them on the show. And lastly, just want to remind you, October 23rd through 25th, the first ever CD Baby DIY Musician Conference in Chicago. And I hope to meet you there and see you there, and it'll just be a great time to hang out. Tickets, $49. We have a link for it in the show notes of the podcast. And yeah, so that's going to do it. We'll catch you next time. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.